to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program, Very Mot. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 25th, 2021. A group of young South Sudanese men and women say mass protests may destroy the country.
The union is calling on the entire youth, who constitute 72% of our population, and indeed all South Sudanese in general, not to join this call for disunity and destruction being headed by the People's Coalition for Civil Action.
And some Sudanese journalists say press freedom is under threats from the military.
The incident is serious because the attackers are the same security forces who are supposed to protect citizens.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan National Youth Union is urging young people across the country to stay away from a planned nationwide demonstrations by a group calling itself the People's Coalition for Civil Action. The protest is scheduled for August 30th. The chairperson of the union says any change of government through a coup or staged popular uprising may push the country into political instability, chaos, and economic meltdown as witnessed in other countries. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Addressing reporters in Juba on Tuesday, Gola Boyoi, chairperson of the National Youth Union, condemned the planned peaceful demonstration being organized by the People's Coalition for Civil Action is scheduled to take place on August 30th. Boyoi says the youth union believes such demonstrations are an democratic way of toppling a government. He says the South Sudanese people should give the parties to the peace agreement a chance to fully implement the revitalized peace deal, which includes a time frame for holding national election. He says that is when the people will decide which political party or individual they choose to entrust their lives with. Boyoi is urging young people not to take part in the upcoming demonstration.
The union is calling on the entire youth, who constitute 72% of our population, and indeed all South Sudanese in general, not to join this call for disunity and destruction being headed by the People's Coalition for Civil Action. We're also calling on the business community and the working class to ignore this uprising and go about their normal duties as usual on the 30th of August 2021.
The People's Coalition for Civil Action is headed by a group of civil society activists who says their movement emerged from citizen dissatisfaction with lack of services delivered by President Salva Kiir's government. In several of their statements seen by South Sudan in Focus, the coalition has set the 30th of August as the National Awakening Day, where South Sudanese will take to the streets to protest against the government's poor performance and to call for the resignation of President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar. Boyoi says some South Sudanese often use the nation young people to carry out their hidden agenda through demonstration, rebellion, and conflict. He says young men and women should never again be used by politicians with ulterior motives.
Yeah, actually, the young people has been used by politicians as a fuel, especially in the communal violence, rebellions, and now they are trying to use the youth again to actually going out and create violence and uprising against the regime. And that's why we are saying enough is enough. We are not going to be used again. We are matured enough. We know our rights and we know our role in this nation. Our role is to contribute positively in nation building, not for destruction.
Peter Maler, a youth rights activist and a representative of South Sudan Youth Coalition, says although a peaceful protest is a constitutional right, it is not the right time to hold a demonstration because the country is in the throes of several challenges, including road ambushes, ethnic fighting, and an economic crisis.
We feel that these protests will expose the country and especially the youth and the vulnerable groups to more dangers than what we think is a right that we're demanding as people. So because we are the youth and we will be the people who will go on the road to protest. And we will be the same people who will put the lives of our young people, our the economy that is almost dying.
Boyoi is calling on the People's Coalition for Civil Action to reconsider their position or cancel the protest for the good of the country.
We call on the initiators and supporters of PCCA to reconsider their position or totally back down from it for the sake of salvaging and rescuing our country from sliding into anarchy and worse political unrest.
Article 24, Section 1 and Article 25, Section 1 of the Transitional Constitution of South Sudan recognize the fundamental rights of every citizen to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Still in Juba, a policy analyst with the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies is cautioning the unity government against rushing into organizing elections without implementing all the chapters of the revitalized 2018 peace agreement. The head of the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies says the situation in South Sudan may get worse if parties to the agreement insist on holding elections at the end of the transitional period. The South Sudan government spokesperson and Minister of Information, Michael Makui, says the transitional government of national unity is set to hold elections by the end of its mandate. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Lual Deng, managing director of the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, says South Sudan's problems cannot be solved by holding elections. He says several activities outlined in various chapters of the agreement have yet to be implemented, in which he says it should be implemented before elections are held.
If we don't have a permanent constitution, there's no way, in our view, you can conduct elections. So you have to have preconditions. The government is in place, which is Chapter 1. Chapter 2, this is security sector reform. It's not yet the army, not unified army yet. Chapter 3, resettled returnees from the refugees, from the IDPs, from the POCs, so that they can vote in the elections. That chapter is not.
Deng says the parties to the peace deal have made some significant progress in implementing Chapter 4, which spells out resources, economic and financial management reforms. But Deng says Chapter 5, which talks about transitional justice, accountability, reconciliation and healing, has not been touched yet. While Chapter 6, which covers how to achieve a permanent constitution, is moving slowly. Government spokesperson Michael Makwe says the government will hold elections in the time frame laid out in the agreement.
We are here to ensure that the agreement is implemented. We are here to ensure that these forces which are undergoing training are graduated. We are for elections, because it is the elections that will reduce all this mess which has been established by the agreement. So we are longing for that election to take place. Yeah. So that he who passes, that party that passes, takes over fully. There will be no more compromises. There will be no more accommodations.
Deng says there is a reason why some of the chapters in the agreement were scheduled to be implemented before elections take place. He says if the provisions are not fully implemented prior to elections, some leaders may end up fighting again.
If you don't do this and you rush for election, leave alone, I'm not even talk of that you need to do the population census. You may do it on the basis of the 2010 constituencies. So we have, at least we have no problem there. But the other six conditions, they have to be implemented before you do that. Otherwise, you start over the war, because if the losers, those who lose the election, they may not recognize, and we are back to square one.
Deng says, based on what is written in Chapter 2, he does not think what is happening now is an amalgamation of forces. He says the national army must be based on the constituencies of all 79 counties and Abyei. Deng says the SPLM in opposition has 95% from one ethnic group, and the government army is controlled by another ethnic group. He says holding elections before those issues are worked out will only lead to more problems. Deng is calling on the guarantors of the peace agreement, Uganda and Sudan, to push the leaders harder to fully implement the agreement. He is also urging the parties to focus on implementing the six chapters.
In Chapter 1, government is formed, but the presidency is supposed to be collegial. It's not functioning. They don't meet frequently. Collegial presidency must meet daily, at least for 1 hour. To get the briefing, daily briefing of the president, it's no longer one person. There are six. So let it work. Then repatriation of the people from camps. Chapter 4, we said, yes, we're making progress, the economic reform is happening. And then chapter 5, we said, truth and reconciliation, what prevents you set up a commission? And then chapter 6, the constitution.
Deng says out of 52 parties in South Sudan, only 7 are registered. He says it's important for the parties to know that elections require voter registration, that voters be educated, and that the political parties be allowed to hold rallies. Deng says if the parties cannot implement the remaining activities in all 6 chapters within 9 months, it is better for the parties to start a new transitional period in which holdout groups such as those run by General Thomas Cirillo, General Paul Malong, General Pagana Mum and General Oyai Deng negotiate with the transitional government to end what he calls the continuous fighting in the country. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The head of South Sudan's central bank says the International Monetary Fund has lent South Sudan $334 million for stabilizing the country's ailing economy. This is the second IMF's allocation to South Sudan in 2021. For VOA News, Wake Simon Woodu reports from Juba.
Dier Tongor, governor of the South Sudan Central Bank, confirmed that the $334 million was approved by the board of directors of the International Monetary Fund on August 2nd. Ngor says the money will be used to stabilize the exchange rate between the country's local currency and foreign currencies in order to strengthen the South Sudanese pound and to import more goods and services.
Stabilizing the economy means that we stabilize the exchange rate because we are a country that imports most of the things from outside. And therefore, if we don't stabilize the exchange rate, that will impact prices all the time. So this initiative really is key.
Ngor says the money will also be used to support the country's fiscal year budget, address the economic impacts of COVID-19, balance payment schedules, and strengthen the country's reserves. The amount was allocated to South Sudan as part of the General Allocation of Special Drawing Rights, or SDR. The IMF says the SDR is an allocation it releases to member states as a way of supplementing member countries' foreign exchange reserves. It also allows members to reduce their reliance on more expensive domestic or external debt for building reserves. Ngor says the central bank will inform the public as to how it utilizes the money.
We wanted also, you know, as authorities, after receiving this allocation, to reiterate our commitment that these amounts will be used in a transparent manner and that there will be accountability. The bank will open a special account for these resources and we will make regular reporting on how these amounts are being used.
South Sudan's economy has been deteriorating since 2015 when the country devalued its currency following economic hardships which resulted from the 2012 oil shutdown and the 5.5-year conflict that began in late 2013. Ngor says the latest allocation will help increase reserves and that in turn will help build external resilience and sustain reforms in the foreign exchange market. He says it will also improve liquidity and provide enough policy space to battle the pandemic. Kiden Sawale Lucky, a lecturer at the School of Economics at the University of Juba, agrees with how the central bank plans to use the money but stresses the need for effective planning and implementation of policies in coordination with the money. She says it's important for the government to focus on investing in long-term plans.
First, turning South Sudan's economy from a consuming economy to a producing economy. Second, we need to stabilize prices in the market, or what we call that destabilization of financial markets so that it can create opportunities for investments. And thirdly, the government needs to invest in social sectors such as education, health, infrastructure.
Jame David Kolok, Executive Director of Local NGO Foundation Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance says South Sudan should come up with permanent solutions to the country's chronic economic challenges.
We want to think that such loans should be used for supporting in the local production. And this means that we have got to pay attention on, for example, the agricultural production as a sector of our economy. We should also be looking at, for example, improving our roads as a reason of access to market. And also we should, alongside the fact that we have got to strengthen our internal processes, there must be also a way through which we should address the question of insecurity. Now, without this, no matter how much money we borrow, I think all this money will not be able to do any tangible outcome.
The central bank tried to strengthen the local currency against the U.S. dollar in April when it injected $174 million it received from the IMF in a bid to stabilize the economy. However, since that time, prices of goods and services have remained high. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, some Sudanese journalists demand press freedom. Find out why after this break.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Lenore Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Some Sudanese journalists and rights activists say press freedom is under threat after the Sudanese revolution, which led to the ouster of former President Omar Hassan al-Bashir. Dozens of Sudanese journalists are petitioning the transitional government to guarantee their protection and safety after one of their colleagues was attacked and beaten by some men in military uniform in Khartoum this week. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Dozens of Sudanese journalists working for local and international media outlets marched on the streets of Khartoum Tuesday to demand justice for their colleague Ali al-Dali, who was attacked and beaten by Sudanese military intelligence officers. Military officers beat al-Dali on Monday while he was covering an accident involving a minibus and a motorbike. The journalist was beaten unconscious by the time he was transported to nearby hospital for treatment. Some journalists say attacks on journalists or any other citizens following the revolution is a clear violation of the right to freedom of expression, which is stipulated in the constitution and violates the Juba Peace Agreement. Speaking to this program, Sudanese journalist Sajda Dafalla, who works for Al Zol online newspaper in Khartoum, says al-Dali's beating is a clear indication that the military component of the transitional government in the country does not respect the law.
The incident is serious because the attackers are the same security forces who are supposed to protect citizens. The incident would widen the gap between the military component and the public. This is the time where we all need to work collectively to implement the Juba Peace Agreement, which calls for unity of the country.
Nearly 10 attacks on journalists have occurred in the country since 2019 after the establishment of the joint military and civilian-led transitional government. In October 2020, three journalists were beaten by police officers in two separate incidents during a peaceful demonstration in Khartoum. Sudanese journalist and political analyst Saleh Muhammad Abdallah condemned the attack on al-Dali and called for an immediate investigation into the circumstances surrounding the incident. He says the transitional government has a constitutional obligation to protect journalists on duty.
We call upon the government of Hamdok to immediately issue a clear statement condemning the incident, and they should also ensure that journalists are protected by the law as they carry out their duties. We strongly reject any attack on journalists as it used to happen during the previous administration, which used to silence and violate freedoms.
Malazi Assam, a freelance journalist who has worked for several international media outlets, also condemns Al-Dali's beating and recommends that media laws in Sudan be revised so that any violation of journalists' rights be regarded as a violation of human rights. Assam says media laws have not been amended. She says journalists are still being harassed and beaten, just as they were during the Bashir administration.
Not only journalists alone, but all the other sectors as well. Sudanese citizens are unsafe to move about their lives. So my question is that, when do we expect the real change to happen? When will the security forces carry out their real duty to protect the citizens?
Asad Tahir, Executive Director for Community Promotion for Progress, an NGO that advocates for citizens' rights, says he is disturbed by such an incident during this post-revolution period. He says the government must ensure journalists' safety and that their rights are protected by law, saying they play a crucial role in building a new Sudan.
Press freedom is still facing a lot of violations since the beginning of the revolution and even after the ouster of the former administration. Despite the fact that the revolution calls for freedoms, journalists continue to experience violations mostly from the security forces and from unknown groups or individuals.
Sudanese journalists say they reject any form of violence against the media, and citizens have a right to know what is going on in the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Climate change has made deadly floods in Western Europe like this at least 20% more likely to happen, according to a study. Reuters' Rosanna Philipot reports.
The July rainfall triggered flooding that swept away houses and power lines and left more than 200 people dead, mostly in Germany. Dozens died in Belgium and thousands were also forced to flee their homes in the Netherlands. Scientists say the downpour was likely made heavier by climate change. A day of rainfall can now be up to 19% more intense in the region than it would have been had global atmospheric temperatures not risen by 2.16 degrees Fahrenheit above pre-industrial temperatures. The study was conducted by the World Weather Attribution Scientific Consortium. Climate scientist Frederica Otto is the group's co-leader.
What used to be your 1-in-100-year event that you might have used as a benchmark to prepare your systems has changed and is now more intense. The most important lesson is really extreme weather is deadly. And we need to educate ourselves to take warning seriously.
The 39 WWA scientists conducted their analysis over a wider area spanning parts of France, Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, and Switzerland. They used local weather records and computer simulations to compare the July flooding event with what might have been expected in a world unaffected by climate change. Because warmer air holds more moisture, summer downpours in this region are now 3 to 19% heavier than they would be without global warming, the scientists found. And the event itself was anywhere from 1.2 to 9 times or 20% to 800% more likely to have occurred. With extreme weather events dominating news headlines in recent years, scientists have been under increasing pressure to determine exactly how much climate change is to blame. During the last year alone, researchers found that US drought, a deadly Canadian heat wave, and wildfires across the Siberian Arctic have been worsened by a warming atmosphere. Climate scientist Ralph Toomey is from the Grantham Institute, Imperial College London.
So the fact that people are losing their lives in one of the richest countries in the world, that is truly shocking. And I think what it tells you, or tells me, is actually nowhere is safe. So if we know that there's more extreme rainfall, that can happen anywhere, anytime. And we sort of thought to ourselves, well, you know, Germany's going to be in good shape, that, you know, well, if Germany's not in good shape, who's going to be in good shape? And they clearly weren't. They were caught out. So I think it simply says to everybody that, you know, nowhere is really safe.
Despite COVID-19 vaccine being available to all South African adults, uptake remains low, with just 20% of adults having received first dose. The Muslim Association of South Africa is one of the many groups combating vaccine hesitancy by delivering shots to doorsteps. Linda Givtash reports from Johannesburg.
Dawn Krotz received her Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine from a paramedic in the comfort of her South Johannesburg home. While the vaccine has been made available to the 64-year-old since April, Krotz says rumors about the side effects made her hesitate. But the reality of the deadly virus changed her mind.
I decided to get it because I saw my daughter-in-law's father got so sick and he passed away. And then I thought, hey, let me also get it. I take the flu vaccine every year. I go and they buy it and they give it to me. And then I thought, no, let me do this also.
With South Africa's COVID-19 death toll surpassing 79,000, volunteer health workers are scrambling to quell people's vaccine fears. The country's Muslim Association launched an at-home vaccination program to provide individual attention to allay concerns and to remove the barriers of traveling to a clinic. Mohammed Varachia is one of the paramedics delivering at-home vaccines.
I think it's just a misconception, people reading on social media, people hearing from different people that it's bad for you, that it's man-made, how can we create a vaccine in a year, etc., etc. So there's a lot of hesitancy that we've come across, but we put the fears to bed.
Another problem is access to transportation and basic information about how one can get the vaccine, especially among the elderly. Ronelle Berger is an economics professor at Stellenbosch University studying health inequality.
The registration for vaccines are electronic, and even though you can at sites also register, you need to know where the sites are before you can show up there.
For some people, like 22-year-old Kurt Fisher, who is quadriplegic, getting to a vaccine site is difficult both physically and mentally. While the rest of his family has been vaccinated, his father, Kevin Fisher, says having an at-home option for his son was a game changer.
I would have sacrificed not having it to give him my shot if possible, that he's first. The familiarity of being able to be in his house is a big benefit, that there's no stress involved going to a foreign venue.
Experts say volunteer efforts are closing the gap in vaccinating more people, especially the most vulnerable. President Cyril Ramaphosa applauded the country's youth on Monday for rushing to sites as vaccines were made available to those as young as 18. But experts warn that fears and other barriers still need to be addressed, or the latest uptick could fizzle out as it did among older age groups. Linda Givtash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Let us know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We reserve the right to read your brief comments every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Sambala Sambala by Genesis the Veteran. I am John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your phones, homes, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are out there in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Saba saba, the sunu chure chibaga nazara. No pure saba saba, moju kulu adena koto lutuda. No pure saba saba, moju kulu su adena koto lutuda. Anyara na suna mede na kadita koju debi ni mede na suna mani elu. Anyara na toyo ya na koju na kalondi ta koju debi ni mede na suna mani ya. Na biki na magika sumirunda kili ngela suna wawere tu sambala. Sambala, 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 sambala.